So welcome everyone to somebody referred to this today as our grand opening, but actually we're not calling this our grand opening. We open up the whole thing. We have our meditation hall and our other buildings and grounds more in actuality of our vision, and then we'll have our grand opening. Maybe call it our grand opening, but we're just calling this our first meditation. But before I get into the Dharma talk, I guess it would be wrong of me not to acknowledge that at least in our little world, something significant has occurred, which is we are here, and for the Florida Community Mindfulness to have our own space. Which means this is your space that we can practice in, that we can create great beauty and peace and calmness for ourselves and the larger community, and to be a place like an oasis of beauty and meaning to as many people as possible. This is certainly our intention. I don't think there's any need at this moment to talk about specific people. Obviously, in every endeavor, as you know, there are major players, there are bit players, there are people who are on center stage, and then there are very important people who are behind the stages, and many important people who are in the office, and all kinds of things. So that's certainly, we are here today because of the energy of many. The energy of people who came together several years ago within the Tampa Sangha, St. Pete Sangha, to say, gee, maybe we need a little more going on. I mean, we're kind of growing. Maybe we need more than just renting a space once a week in a yoga center. Maybe we should rent twice a week. Maybe we should lease our own space. And before we knew it, we were talking about purchasing our own space. And then there was that whole looking for space, and looking in certain areas and having a certain kind of agenda for what we were looking for in a certain part of town. And let me just say that being here on Nebraska Avenue between Hillsborough and Sly was not where we were heading for. But because of causes and conditions, we found this place, and for whatever reason, we felt this is the place. This is the place where we can settle down, where we can create a home. And then, of course, we wouldn't be here today without the Florida Community Mindfulness Board that got involved in the process and joining with the Tampa Sangha to create a larger vision for the whole community. Obviously, as many of you know, because you were bombarded with many emails for many months and personal calls, we raised $600,000. So we had a very meaningful campaign, because it was my intention that our primary focus here is creating a place, again, that is a real oasis of healing and transformation for the community, and not that we were going to be spending the rest of our lives paying off our mortgage. That was one business deal I didn't want to get into. So the community really rallied, and we were able to purchase this place outright, so we don't have a mortgage. We were able to raise enough initial funds to begin the transformation. We're a long way away, but and again, all the people who have showed up since August, since we closed, people who've moved here just specifically to be of help, people who have really given a lot of their time and energy and some of their time and energy in countless ways bring us to this moment here today. So, on behalf of everybody, let's express gratitude to the whole community. As I say, it's, and I'm not even, mentioning so many antecedents and other causes that are, why we are here today as a community, as well as why each of us is here as individuals. I mean, each of us have their own causes and conditions of their own life. Because again, I can't, unless there is anybody here with incredible capacity to see the future, I don't think any of us 6 months ago, a year ago, 5 years ago, ever thought on a Sunday morning at 11 o'clock we'd be sitting in the downstairs of a meditation center, prior church, on Nebraska Avenue. What a miracle, here we are. I'll say a few words afterwards. We are going to, before we eat and have the brunch, there will be tours and kind of give you a sense of what's going on here and what the plans. But this morning, for my Dharma talk, I wanted to, since we're kind of looking at antecedents and roots and vision, I wanted to share with you, because I'm teaching here next week too, so it'll probably be over at least a couple of weeks and maybe go further. But I wanted to talk to you a little about something that's called the order of interbeing. And I'll be referring to a book by Thich Nhat Hanh called Interbeing. I don't know how many people are familiar with the interbeing and the order of interbeing. Some, but not most. So I'm sure, as most of you know, we in this community gain much inspiration and knowledge and teaching and example and mentorship from Thich Nhat Hanh, one of the great teachers alive today in the world. But just in his own personal journey, back in the 60s, which again in Vietnam was, as we know as Americans, was a very painful time, difficult time, especially for the Vietnamese. And in the midst of that, Thich Nhat Hanh, a fairly youngish monk, founded a order, a new order, O-R-D-E-R, in Vietnam. He founded it with six of his lay students. Most of them all were college students, and all of them were involved in an endeavor he called the School of Youth for Social Service. So he was the only monastic, and there were three young men and three young women, and this was the beginning of this order. And I want to talk about the order today because I think the vision of the order, or Thich Nhat Hanh's vision of Buddhism in the 20th, 21st century, I think is very, to me at least, very much what we're about here. So I want to share that with you. Actually, the order is now an established order. It was established in Vietnam, as I said, in the 60s because of the terrible suffering that went on, and especially with many of his students, Vietnamese students, and because he had to go into exile himself in the late 60s, the order kind of just was kind of fallow for several decades. But he did revise it in the 80s, and now it is quite strong, quite an international movement, the Order of Interbeing. And within our own community, many of you may not know it, but in our own community, the Florida Community Mindfulness, we have 20 or 25 of our members are either fully ordained members of the order or aspirants. So in a certain way, Thich Nhat Hanh's vision of creating this core community of practitioners continues to the day. But today I really am not here to talk about the order, but I want to use some of the principles of the order to give you a sense, I think, of really what we hope to be about. Let me just begin, and again, I'm reading from this book, Interbeing. Order of Interbeing, actually, Interbeing, was a word that Thich Nhat Hanh made up. It's an interesting word. I don't know how it sounds to you. I remember when he first brought it up, it sounded a little space war-ish, kind of the order of interbeing. I mean, it sounded a little science fictionist kind of thing, interbeing. But I think he was casting around as you know, the Vietnamese, like other some other of the Asian languages that are character-based, these characters, these words, have multiple meanings. So it's often very hard to take a character, you know, that has multiple meanings and find a word in English that exactly means it. So interbeing kind of was his own attempt. But the actual Vietnamese is Tiep Hien, T-I-E-P-H-I-E-N. And Tiep means being in touch with, and Hien means realizing, making it here and now. So this is an order of people, Tiep, people who want to be in touch. Now, the obvious question is, be in touch with what? What are we to be in touch with? Because many of us as human beings believe we're in touch with something. So this in touch with has special meaning. One of the things it has to do with being in touch with reality, which in Buddhism is kind of a loaded word. But reality has multiple meanings, but it means I'm in touch with the reality of the world, and I'm in touch with the reality of my own mind. To be in touch with reality, the way things really are, is not about to be in touch with our thoughts about reality, our stories about reality, our projections about reality, but has to do with really capacity to be present to reality as it really is, whether it is the internal reality of our thoughts, feelings, perceptions, our mind, or at a deeper level, the reality of our Buddha mind, our true mind. That which is, we could say, informs, is underneath, is the holder, is the source of this mind of thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. But to be able to be in reality with our mind, and then to be into reality in life. To be in touch with life. And again, many of us think we're in touch with life because we're in touch with our thoughts about life. We're in touch with the dramas we create about life. But that's not life. So to be in touch with life means to be in touch with the simplicity of things as they are. So when we're with another human being, we are totally in touch with them. We see them. We hear them. We sense them. And we are totally open to them. We're in touch with reality. When we eat, we're in touch with the food we're eating, not as, this is delicious, this is good, I wonder who made it, I wonder what the ingredients are, I like this, I don't like this, but in touch with it as an experience. You know, smelling, tasting, feeling. And then feeling the actual feeling that arises within our mind in relationship to what we're eating. Right? We're in touch with the beautiful things in life. Flowers, and trees, and people, and sundowns, and blue skies. Right? But it also means we're in touch with suffering. The suffering of life, the suffering of our own life, the suffering of people in our families and communities, and in touch with the suffering of the world. So this capacity to be in touch with, to be in reality, is kind of all involved and probably more with the word Tiep. Hien, again, means realizing it. Okay, and this is, again, something significant. So the idea of realizing is we make it real within ourself. Right? So many of us have ideals, right? Many of us have values. I would imagine in a group like this, we are a group of people who have lots of ideals, and lots of values about ourselves and how we want to be and how we want the world to be and how we want people to treat each other, et cetera, et cetera. So the emphasis again here is on realization, not just reading about, not just talking about, not just thinking about, not just wanting to be, but actually realizing it. And where do we realize it? In the here and now. Okay. This is another key piece of this, that if we're going to realize, you know, if we want a peaceful world, a nonviolent world, a world where people treat each other with kindness and understanding and compassion, right? Then it is us who has to realize it in the reality of our day-to-day life. Not in some future time, but in the here and now. So this combination, right, of knowing reality, being in touch with reality, the way things are, and that actualizing in the here and now our beliefs, not as aspirations, not as goal points, not as endpoints, but as something that we live, right? Day to day, hour to hour. It's like learning to be awake. Right. And we talked about that earlier in our meditation. You know, again, I would say if we thought about it or asked in a group like this, I said, well, how many people want to lead a wakeful life, be awake? And I would say, imagine most of us would say, sounds good. Yeah, I'd like to be wakeful. But if it becomes not just an intention, but something that we want to actualize, realize, we have to realize it when? In the here and now. When is the here and now? It means every moment. If I'm going to be a wakeful person, an aware person, then I have to be awake and aware every moment of the day. Now, having said that, since most of us are not there yet, a fully awakened person is a highly realized being. In Buddhism, it's called the Buddha. Then our life has to be about in every moment to be as wakeful as I can be. And to know that every moment is a fresh moment. Right? So even if for the last 3 minutes I've been, I don't know, lost in some drama, right? I have the capacity, if I'm in line with my intention, to what? To wake up. Oh, I'm lost in a drama. I'm lost in a fantasy. I'm lost in a dream. Right? I'm creating suffering for myself or somebody else. Right? Let me wake up. Right? The same way when we are asleep at night, we dream all kinds of things. Right? We have good dreams. We have bad dreams. We have meaningful dreams. We have meaningless dreams. Right? But when we wake up, as soon as we wake up, what happens? We know that the dream disappears and we are awake. We know that the dream is over. And as soon as we wake up, whatever the content of last night's dream is over. And we have the ability in this moment to say what? I'm awake. The dream is past. And I have the opportunity in this moment to be as totally fresh and open. In other words, I can begin anew every moment. So the commitment to wakefulness is the commitment to do our best in every moment, the here and now, to be awake, and to know when we fall asleep, to what? To wake up again. Now again, that's not a lot of work. And it just takes an intention to want to be wakeful and to really have reflected on it so one really knows the benefits of wakefulness, and also to be clear about the lack of benefits or the problematic nature of always being lost. Lost in thought. Lost in our emotional dramas. Lost in our endless ruminations, fantasies, all the neurotic imaginations that our self and mind are capable of projecting, right? All by themselves. But in a moment of wakefulness, we can see it. And we can just wake ourselves awake. Right? Just the same way, again, in our meditation, right? We, you know, we sit down, we have a great intention to be mindful, to be present to every breath, right? And we often start out quite wonderfully, quite proud of ourselves. And yet, it's quite possible within a few minutes, not only will there be intrusive thoughts, but we may find one especially interesting. As if somehow this one is unique compared to the 20 million I've thought in the rest of the past of my life. This one really needs attending to. So we get hooked. But if over time we have a real commitment to being wakeful, a little voice begins to go, wake up. Let go. And what do? We drop the story, we drop the drama, we drop whatever it is, we relax, and we just start again. No need to recriminate, no need to judge ourselves, no need to do any of that. Right? Because every moment is a fresh moment. And what you need to realize is that capacity to constantly renew and refresh and come back is practice. That's practice. Just getting it right is not practice. Getting it right is what we're trying to do. But the practice is getting it right, not getting it right, hitting the wrong notes, hitting it right again. So that's a little bit about this, the name Tiepien. To be in touch and to realize realization in the here and now. Now, there are 14 mindfulness trainings of the order, which are quite wonderful. And again, they're in this book. You can go online and find them. But I want to go to a part of the order that has always had great meaning to me, which is the charter. Because the charter of the order is where Thich Nhat Hanh set forth back in the 60s his vision of Dharma. And we got to understand Buddhism, Dharma, had been in Vietnam for 1,000 years, maybe more. I'm not sure of the history, but I mean, quite well established, was the dominant religion of Vietnam and a quite extensive history. For him, and had a very traditional, what's called a Buddhist community. The traditional Buddhist community is made up of four types of ordinations. There's lay ordination, that's for people like you and I. Laymen and women have their ordination. It's a small ritual that when people join the Buddhist family, we do it in our own community. People formally become Buddhists, join the Buddhist family. They go through a little ordination ceremony, and they're considered in traditional Buddhism ordained laymen and laymen women. And then in Buddhism, which is fairly unique, I think only other Catholicism has celibate orders of monks and nuns, and so there is a ordination with much more involvement involved than lay ordination for people who want to follow the monastic life, and so traditionally that's called the fourfold sangha, if you ever hear words. Laymen, lay women, monks and nuns. So it's interesting to me that in the midst of all this very traditional Buddhist culture in Vietnam in the 60s, Thich Nhat Hanh, with six young people, creates this new order. So to me, that's something to pay attention to. What was he up to? We'll see how far we get today, and then we'll continue next week. I'm just going to refer to some of this, the again, even though a charter, and when we think charter, we think legal. and it is kind of a document, but it has a lot of wonderful teaching in it. So in the first chapter, number 2, it says the aim of the order is to actualize Buddhism by studying, experimenting with, and applying Buddhism in modern life, with special emphasis on the Bodhisattva ideal. So this is, we're pretty wide open here in America, but in a very traditional society, this is unusual. Because he's saying, you know, the aim of this order is to practice Buddhism. He's not saying that, is he? So please understand, he's saying the aim of this order is to actualize Buddhism. Right? So it's not to worship, it's not to do rituals, it's not just to study, it's not to do all the so-called religious things. Right? But he said it's to actualize Buddhism, which again comes back to what? To actualize it where? In the life of the individual, in the life of the community, and in the life of the broader community. And then he says, and how do we do that? By studying, obviously, we need to study, but experimenting with. This is very wonderful, and it goes deeper into that. He's taking the fundamental teachings and practices of this 2,500-year-old tradition, and instead of saying it is dogma, it is something we have to follow the same way our ancestors do. He said it is something we need to study so we can learn this tradition, right? Access this wisdom of 2,500 years. But then what are we to do? Experiment. Do you remember those of us who were in high school science? Remember there were these experiments we did. We probably even did them in grade school. They just got a little more interesting. But we did experiments, right? And the whole idea of an experiment, as far as I remember, is, you know, there was a certain outcome that we were actually going to experiment to see if it actually worked, right? So that was one kind of experimentation. The other kind of experimentation was a little more freeform. If you put this together and that together and add a little of this, I wonder what happens, right? So it seems like there are these two kind of experimentations. One is to take the truths that have been handed down to us and within our own lives a reality experiment to see if they really, really are real. You know, I mean, there's a lot of ideas, concepts, religious, non-religious, life that have been passed down. That how often do people go and say, are they true? Are they real? Do they really relate to reality, or have they become concepts and ideas that only live in some reality that has not grounded? So he says, the aim, and I'm saying this because the word is order, but I really see it as this is what our community, or at least my vision of our community, is: we are to actualize Buddhism by studying it, then experimenting with it. In our individual lives, right? You come here, you hear Dharma, you hear teachings. You go on the web and you can hear endless teachings. You go in bookstores, you can access endless teachings, right? Well, the experiment is what? You take it home and go, does it work? You know, does it work in my life? If I do it as prescribed, does it work? That's an experimentation. At the end of which, over a period of time, you should say, yeah, it does work. My mind is a little more peaceful. I am a little clearer. I'm not as selfish as I used to be. I'm a little more open to others, right? Oh, it's working, as well as the community. We experiment. And then the third was applying Buddhism in modern life. So again, can you see the movement here? From the past, we're getting this, and if people, again, I know there are people here who have studied Buddhism, experimented Buddhism, and many people here who haven't. But to me, Buddhism is just a word, right? It's a label. It's a label, a word, a label for what? I think at the very simplest way, it's a label of 2,500 years of experimentation that people just like us at different times and cultures and whatever, they have experimented with looking at some very fundamental issues that all of us at every human being deals with. Who am I? What am I? Why do I suffer? Why do people I love suffer? Why is there so much suffering in the world? How is there a way to end suffering, to free people from suffering, right? So, you know, some very fundamental questions. These kinds of questions go back to the Buddha. And for 2,500 years, millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of people have experimented with these issues and these, and have developed many wonderful practices and teachings and philosophies and psychology of the mind, meditation techniques, et cetera, in response to that. So that's what we're studying. Right? And then we are, our job is to experiment. Right? Are they true? Are they valid? Do they work? And then apply them to modern life. My hope is the Florida Community of Mindfulness, and now that we have our own practice center, that's what we'll be doing here. Okay. We will be experimenting with the teachings and practices that have been passed down to us, and we will, if we find out they have value and meaning, we want to, in a very creative way, think about how can I bring this into life. What life? Modern life, right? You know, the life of our society, the life of our people, all the issues that people are dealing with, all the issues that people are struggling with in our society. We need to decide whether these ageless teachings that have been given to us can be applied into modern life to be of benefit. And this is a very creative process that we are in. But again, first, we cannot skip over the experimentation phase. This is the work. Right? Many of us would love to. We've read the stuff. We've read Thich Nhat Hanh. We've read the Dharma. We've read about meditation. We've read about freedom from suffering. We've read about enlightenment. We've read about wakefulness, right? So we'd like to skip over the experimental part and get right on to sharing it, spreading it, right? Because this can be a little challenging, right? The experimentation. We kind of intellectually get it, but then when we actually go to practice it and cross our legs and sit down, it doesn't just happen overnight, does it? So there's a part of us that would like to kind of go, well, I know how to do it. Well, let me go on and teach somebody else, right? And because many of us here are bright people and competent people, and maybe we are educators or other ways, we can be good at that. But as you remember back in the title of Tiapien, before we really can bring it in a meaningful way into the world, we have to become it ourselves. Which is a very different way of looking at things that many people in our society look at things. They look at things as life is a contest of ideas. Right, a competition among values. Right, where I mean, right. If you get a phone call between 5 and 7 these days, you know who's calling you. Right, somebody who's trying to tell you about their values and what your value should be, and about the competition of values, and who's right and who's wrong, and right, who's good, who's bad. But when we talk about actualization and realization, we're talking about we have to become our values. We have to be our values. We have to live our values. We have to be examples of every belief we have. And then what? Then when we go into the world, we have really something meaningful to give, more than a good idea. I mean, why are we here today? I mean, Buddhism had good ideas 2,500 years ago, right? Jesus Christ had good ideas ago 2,000, right? And all the major religions had good ideas, right? So why are we here? Why is humanity still struggling with the same issues from thousands of years ago? I think if we're honest, we'd say, well, the missing piece is the actualization, the realization. And so I think one of the special things of our community, in the broader sense, I mean, when I say our community, I mean, we are a formal community in the sense that people join our community and we're a formal community. But when I say, to me, our community is really much wider than that. And I really hope that our home here can be kind of an energy center that involves with other like-minded peoples who share similar values and similar desires to create a better world. But again, you cannot create a better world just through ideas. We have to realize those ideas. We have to be them. And we have to live them. This is why in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, the unique things about him is the idea that community is a practice. Community is a practice, and it's an essential practice. There are many people who like to practice how? On their own, right? Individual practitioners. And there's nothing wrong with that. But Thich Nhat Hanh has wisely figured out that on our own, we cannot generate the type of energy that's needed to change this very sick, dysfunctional world. That we really need a coming together of like-minded people. Community, in the best sense of the word. As well as because of the profound materialism, materialistic outlook, consumeristic outlook, objectification outlook of our culture, and the incredible sophistication of the electronic media, advertising, etc., and the bombardment of messages that each of us receive and our children receive. On a constant basis, that to have the type of energy that can resist, that endless pounding of information and trying to get us to be a certain way. I mean, do you notice even in this election, what you keep hearing about is what? The incredible amount of money that is being spent on what? Advertising. Right? You know, the things you get in the mail and on the TV and on the internet, it's constantly getting us to what? To think in a very certain way. We don't realize that, and again, I'm not being conspiratorial, I'm just saying in the biggest sense, that all marketing, all advertising, they are trying to get human beings to what? To buy into their message and see the world the way they want. Right? I mean, that's what if you have any friends or if you work in marketing or advertising, you know, that's what it's about. So, I mean, the capacity to resist that and to be capable of thinking critically and thinking clearly and really not giving into that, it takes an individual with a good, strong practice, and it takes a community where a different vision of the world and what it means to be a human being and what life's really about, to resist that. But also in the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, community is a practice. In the ordination ceremony, we just did it when we just had a retreat, we usually do one at retreat, when people take refuge in the Sangha and the community, they say, the verse says something like, the community that lives in harmony and awareness. I sometimes find myself spontaneously adding, even though that's what it says in the book, I say, the community that is doing its best to live in harmony and awareness. So again, I add that doing its best because it's a practice. Living in harmony and awareness. Living in harmony and awareness within our families, within our relationships, with our parents, with our children. Living in harmony and awareness with our work colleagues, right? Living in harmony and awareness is a practice. It's a wonderful practice. It's applied Buddhism, where we take it into the world. And so as a community, community becomes a practice. See, and now that we have a place, the community, Florida Community Mindfulness has been around, I think, I don't know, how long have we been around? 15 years or so? 20, 15? 16 years. Somewhere between 15 and 20 years we've been around. But, you know, when you don't have much, there's not much to get attached to, right? And if you don't have a lot of decisions to do, to make, then you don't have a lot of different people with ideas about how to make decisions and what's the right decision, you see. But now we have this wonderful thing. We have a physical place, and that people can have all kinds of different views about. It should be like this, it should be like that. The wall should be this color, the wall should be that color. We should cover it with this, we should cover it with that. This should be the first thing. This, you know, see how wonderful it is. Now we have lots of things that we can have differing opinions about. We can be in conflict about. Our egos can get attached to my way versus your way. I'm right. You're. So now community, to me, can really become practice. It hasn't been that way up to now. Because it's easy, easy, easy to be harmonious and loving and nice with people, you know, that you see once a week. You kind of greet them in the hall. You sit down next to them in silence. And then you have tea with them for 10 or 15 minutes afterwards. Everybody's on their best behavior. Right? You know, so we can go, oh, the Florida Community Mindfulness, it's a community that lives in harmony and awareness. You know, for 15 or 20 minutes a week. I mean, that's... So even though over the years people have said wonderful things about our community, I take it with a grain of salt. Because I know now will be our test. Now will be our test. and really our capacity to live in harmony and awareness, to be understanding, to let go of our own views, to be not judgmental, to be accepting, you know, all those things will now have an opportunity to manifest in a real way. Because when we come here, again, we are experimenting, right? And the experiments we do here, see, the advantage, hopefully, that we have in a community like this is that all of us more or less want these things, right? Want to live in harmony and awareness, want to be kind, want to be wakeful, want to be accepting of others, wants to be less egocentric and narcissistic, right? I mean, hopefully most of us are not here because we feel that our grandiosity in the outside world needs to be worked on. So I'll just come to the Florida Community Mindfulness and see if I can become more grandiose and narcissistic than I am. No, we are here to experiment with being less so, right? But hopefully, the things we learn here in this kind of more ideal conditions, where sort of everybody more or less has committed to the same direction, will make us better when we go home to our families, go home to our relations, go home to our children, and our parents and our significant others and our work colleagues and our neighbors who have political signs on their front thing, which we heartily disagree with, and, you know, all that. We will be a little more understanding and tolerant and see we are all part of a broader community, too, in which there is diversity. So, and it says, the aim of the order is to actualize Buddhism by studying, experimenting with, and applying Buddhism in modern life with a special emphasis on the Bodhisattva ideal. So that is only three lines of this charter. At this rate, it may need more than 2 weeks. But anyhow, I think it's quite kind of wonderful. So it says, he's also adds, applying Buddhism in modern life with a special emphasis on the Bodhisattva ideal. Just how many people the word Bodhisattva ideal, they're not sure what it really means? Good. How many people know exactly what it means? How many people are in the middle? They've kind of heard of it and now. So the Bodhisattva ideal, again, is really a very wonderful central development in Buddhism, historically. In the earlier stages of Buddhism, the kind of ideal was to be an awakened human being, but the emphasis was on the individual. The individual becoming awake, the individual freeing themselves of all their delusions, all their emotional afflictions, et cetera, and leading an awakened life, fully developing their capacity of their mind to be live in harmony and peace. And what came out of that ideal, well, the sense was, well, a very easy way to do that, or that is easier to do if one's not so involved in the world. Right? So along with this, what's called the Arhat path, was this idea of renunciation, right? I mean, just kind of renounce it all, right? I just don't get involved, right? Don't have a career, don't get married, don't, you know what I'm saying? Don't do all that, because that just creates more attachment and suffering and nonsense, right? So it's just simpler to kind of step back from it all and just work on my own personal individual cultivation. That's my goal. Then at a certain point in the development of Buddhism came this other ideal. This is the Bodhisattva. And in this ideal, the purpose of individual liberation was for the liberation of the whole. That one's personal journey out of the world of suffering into the world of liberation and freedom was a journey that one was taking, so one had the capacity then to liberate all beings. Right? So all of a sudden, the world was not something to leave, but the world was something to enter fully. And that the path of transformation did not occur by oneself, but occurs in relationship to everyone. And that the actual suffering of the world and the places of suffering are the places where the bodhisattva, this bodhisattva, is actually living and participating. So obviously you can see that for lay people, people like us, the bodhisattva ideal was much more congruent. Because the message was, because again, most of us are not, even though you know, our own personal suffering may be most most powerful to us, most in our face, right? Most of us can't help but acknowledge that you know, family, friends, people we love are also caught up in the same stuff. And that the suffering of the world and the pain of the world is something that we all participate in. I mean, for example, take this whole thing with global warming and the, right? I mean, whether we recycle or not, whether we drive a hybrid or not, there is no way for us to get out of what's going on in the whole world, is there? We are all interconnected, positively and negatively. Right? And so we understand, you know, I can be the greenest person in the world, right? I mean, I could be the greenest person in the world, but when, you know, when the storms get more significant and the weather changes get more drastic and the seas rise, right, I will be as affected as everyone else. And so then we realize that, you know, I cannot do it by myself. I can do whatever I can. I take responsibility individually, but I have to be aware that, you know, whether I want to or not, my life, the life of my family, my children, my friends, is inextricably linked with the unfolding karma of this world. And then the choice is what? Am I going to contribute to the suffering and the ignorance of the world? Or do I want to be one of those people who work to change things, to liberate? And that is what's called in Buddhism the bodhisattva ideal. The ideal of the awakened person acting in the world, remediating suffering of all kinds. So he says that our applied Buddhism, our taking our Buddhist experimentations into the modern world, are done in the spirit of the of this bodhisattva ideal. Good. I think that's all clear. Right? So anyway, I wanted to share these wonderful early lines because, again, they are very meaningful to me, and I would hope that they stay at the core of our community's actions. So why don't we stop the formal talk now?